You weren't meant to do it all. Let's talk about it on this edition of Key Light.
That was Steve Brown, and I'm Mike Kellogg. The program Key Life, a program without an agenda, except to see you grow in grace. Here's Steve with a teaching for today.
Thanks, Mike. Hope you had a great, wonderful, grand, and glorious Christmas. This old Scrooge did. Now, I'm saying that by faith because I'm recording this before Christmas. But I'm sure I did, because I was with my grandchildren, and that's enough to make an old guy happy, even if you don't like Christmas. And I'm getting so I even like Christmas, but I'm glad it's over. And what we're going to do today is that we're going to return to our study in the book of Joshua. Now, if you're just joining us, what we're doing is that we're in the middle of a very long survey of the Old Testament. We're doing that for a lot of reasons. We're doing that because most Christians don't spend much time in the Old Testament, and they think that in the Old Testament we have a mean God, and in the New Testament we have a loving God. That is silly. Not only that, it's heresy. The same God of the Old Testament is the God who spoke to Paul, who was Jesus in the New Testament. There's so much love and grace in the Old Testament, and God says what he means, and he means what he says, so there are times when you wince, but every Christian ought to know what the Old Testament has to say. Now, we're up to the book of Joshua, and we're just taking our time, and when we get tired of this, we'll come back, and we'll do something else, and then we'll come back to our Old Testament survey, because I really do want to get through each of these books. Now, I'm not doing line by line, precept upon precept. What I'm doing is introducing you to a book, telling you some of the major themes and the central verses in those books. And then I'm taking a little bit of time generally to pick out some of my favorite verses. It is my program, as Rush Limbaugh says, and I get to pick the topics. But I pick out some of my favorite verses in a particular book, and we spend a little bit of time on that. And if you stay with us during this Old Testament survey, when it finishes, you will really love the Old Testament. Not only that, when you read it, you'll understand it better, because I've worked so hard to get this material to you. And as I said, we're up to the book of Joshua. Now, the prophets section of the Old Testament is divided into the former prophets, Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings, and the latter prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and the 12. In the Hebrew mind, there was a third section of the Old Testament called the Writings, but we'll get to that a lot later. At any rate, in the Jewish Bible, we're looking at the former prophets, Joshua being one of those, and I've taken the time to introduce you to that book, and then we looked at some of the central themes in Joshua, and I'm going to continue that today. First, from Joshua and his book, we see that the army of the Lord, one can only learn to lead by first serving. Whenever you see a leader with peacock feathers flying in the breeze, who just assumes that you will follow because, after all, he or she is anointed, avoid that person. Go in the other direction. Do you know that story about the time Alfred Hitchcock, and I understand he was a churchman, was in his limousine, and they were going down the street, and he looked over, and a priest was bending over talking to a little boy. And Hitchcock, who was a Roman Catholic, rolled down his window, and he shouted out of the window, "Run, little boy! Run as fast as you can!" Well, whenever you see a Protestant minister, or a priest, or a Christian leader, who's really pompous, assumes leadership out of pomposity, then, as Hitchcock said, run, and run as fast as you can. And in Joshua, we find out that Joshua, all those years, was a servant. All those years, he was a gopher. All those years, he operated under Moses, and he was loyal to Moses. That's how you earn your spurs. It is dangerous, and I think this. And we have some young men at our seminary where I teach, and we're one of the 10 largest seminaries in the world. And I tell you, these young men and young women really are dynamite. They wash a cynic soul out like mine. And sometimes we have very gifted young men or young women, and they get calls to areas of service that are too big for their age. And I'm always glad for that, because that makes the seminary shine when somebody's really that good. But I always pray a lot for them, because I'm afraid they haven't had enough time in the trenches. Well, Joshua had a lot of time in the trenches, and that's one of the main themes that you ought to garner, or principles you ought to garner from the book of Joshua. Secondly, from the book of Joshua, we can learn the faithfulness of God to his promises. Joshua is where God said, or had a big stamp, and he said, completed, plonk, fulfilled, plonk, all the promises, when there was no reason to assume those promises would be fulfilled, that God made to Moses, that God made to Abraham, that God made to his people when they were nobodies in the middle of the desert. God said, see, I told you, it has come to pass. God will always say to his people, see, I told you, it comes to pass, as I said. And then thirdly, and this is brand new as we continue with our study of Joshua, from Joshua in this book, we can learn that in God's army, you have an army of specialists. There are a number of reasons why Moses didn't make it into the Promised Land. One of them's biblical, because he got ticked at the wrong time. But I suspect that there's more to it than that. I think Moses didn't get into the Promised Land because he had done what he was supposed to do. But let me give you something that I don't know if I can prove from Scripture, but I think probably is really true. Moses was gifted for the wilderness. What? Moses was gifted for the wilderness. Joshua was gifted for the war. And I would suggest later on, and in fact will suggest when we start looking at some of the kings, and we look at some of the leaders, that others were gifted for the Promised Land. Now, what does that say to you? It says to me that God's army is an army of specialists. Now, you'll find that happening in the New Testament more specifically. 1 Corinthians 12, 13 and 14, Romans 12, Ephesians 4, and a number of other places where God says, you need each other. We weren't meant to do it all. I remember when I was a young pastor, starry-eyed, bushy-tailed, man, I thought, they're fortunate to have me. And then I got to this little church on Cape Cod, and we were up there 2 or 3 months ago, drove by the church, and those were good times, because those people loved me when I wasn't very lovable, and we had 14 pastors in that church, and they could have killed me if they'd wanted to, but they were encouragers, and they gave me their wisdom, and until the day I die, I'll look back on those days as a time when those men of God cared for me and loved me, and taught me, and protected me. I just love that kind of time. Let me tell you what happened when I first became a pastor. I didn't know much about being a pastor. I hadn't gone to seminary in those days. In fact, I went to seminary while I was a pastor. I had one sermon, and that was it. I mean, I didn't know anything else to say. And then I looked around and realized they wanted me to be the minister of youth. Now, I could do that. I was still young. And then I looked around, and I realized they wanted me to be the secretary. And I looked around, and I realized they wanted me to be the administrator. And then, by the way, my administrative efforts looked like Jericho after the trumpets. And kids run from me. And I couldn't type hardly at all in those days. And I looked around, and they wanted me to be the janitor. And then I found out they wanted me, if anybody found Christ, to lead them to Christ. So I was to be the only evangelist in the church. And then I saw that they wanted me to be the only discipler in the church. And I remember as a young man thinking, shoot, I'm going to raise turnips in North Carolina. I can do that. That was a time in my life when I didn't know Jesus. But as I began to find out who he was, he began to tell me, Steve, you don't have to do all this. You got to be faithful to the place where I called you. You got to do what I tell you to do, but you don't have to do what others can do, because I've gifted some people for the wilderness, some people for the Promised Land, and some people for the battle. And so in Joshua, you find that God's army is an army of specialists, not altogether different from the teaching in the New Testament about spiritual gifts. Now, as we look at some of these principles, let me give you one final one. And then tomorrow we'll begin to just kind of pick up on some of my favorite verses. And it's this. From the book of Joshua, you can learn about a man who did what God told him to do, was successful, and was not qualified. Listen, as you read through Joshua, you begin to see, and also when you look at the books that precede Joshua, Joshua was a lot of things, but he was not a military leader. He had been knocking lizards off bedrolls for 40 years. I mean, they didn't have sword drills in the desert. I mean, they had more problem with the lizards and manna up to their ears and quails dropping out of the sky than they. I mean, they just didn't run all the drills that you do at Fort Benning. So this was a man who was called to lead an army when he didn't have any training for leading an army into battle. Now, what does that suggest to you? That suggests to you that if God tells you to do something, he'll provide where he leads you. Frankly, if I were God, I wouldn't have chosen me to do this. I mean, I'd have gotten somebody far more spiritual, who had far more gifts than I have, but I did what he said to do, and it hasn't been half bad. The point is this, whatever God tells you to do, do it. He'll provide what you need. You think about that. Amen. Hey, listen, if you didn't get this this booklet, Christmas Meditations, we're offering, I'm going to offer it through December, and that's just a little bit longer. If you'd like it, let me know. The best time to think about Christmas is after Christmas. The best time to think about Easter is after Easter. The best time to be a brother or sister is outside of National Brotherhood Week. this is really helpful. It'll help you understand the incarnation and deepen your life. If you want to get it, let me know quickly. You can give a call, 1-800-KEY-LIFE, 24 hours a day, or you can write Key Life, Post Office Box 5000, Maitland, Florida, 32794. Or in Canada, Key Life Canada, Post Office Box 32150, Cambridge, Ontario, N3H5M3. Or you can email us, steve@keylife.org, with your regular mailing address. And when I say it's free, I really mean that. But God, but some of you, if you pray about it, God's calling you to stand with us financially. And if you're called to do that, this is a very difficult time for us. And anything that you could do to help us would mean a lot. And for any gift of any size, when you request it, I'll send along the cassette teaching 5 facets of God's love as my thank you. And charge a gift to your MasterCard, Visa, Discover card included in your envelope. Listen, whenever you write or call, give us the call letters of this great station, because a lot of good folks make this broadcast possible. And, oh, yes, Key Life is a production of Key Life Network.